I have no idea how far we'll get this morning. I'm prepared to go as far as day three. We'll see if that happens. So let's read those verses in Genesis 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening, and there was morning, one day. Then God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse. And it was so. God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening and there was morning a second day. Then God said, "Let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear," and it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the gathering of the waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, fruit trees on the earth bearing fruit after their kind with seed in them." And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seeds after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seed in them after their kind. And God saw that it was good. There was evening, there was morning, a third day. We've spent the first week basically looking at the aspects of the truthfulness, the value of the Genesis account as the only reasonable explanation for all that we have around us. And we spent a lot of time looking at why the evolutionary process is not rational or reasonable or even scientific. But then after that first week, I told you that the purpose of this book is not necessarily apologetic. It was written to firmly establish in the minds of the people to whom Moses wrote it that their God was the only God among all the gods of the Egyptians or the pagan gods in whom they were about to infiltrate when they conquered the promised land. That's when I believe Moses wrote this, was prior to the conquering of the promised land. And we saw last week, we paused a little bit to look at the overall value of the study of this book, and that's recorded and on the church's website if you missed it and are interested in what we had to say about that. So today I think it's time to just dig into the text and see what specifically we learn about the creation of the universe from what God has specifically revealed in the text. Does this give us all the answers and all the explanation of every question we could possibly have? I don't think it will, but that doesn't mean it's not a trustworthy or accurate or valuable account, because it's all we need. It really is sufficient. The scriptures are sufficient. Everything we need to understand about creation, we get here. And that's why I want to look at it, moving not too slowly to bore you, but not too quickly to overwhelm you with more evidence or more information than you're capable of. That you might be more capable of grasping lots of information than the guy teaching it. So I got to move at a pace that fits for both of us. In the beginning, the first words of verse 1. This is previous to the non-existing reality of time. I think I told you last week or a week before. Before the beginning, before in the beginning, there was no time. Eternity past is not measured in a number of years, time is a function of the creation of God. It is one aspect of God's creation that was created for the purpose of helping us understand what God is doing and how God is dealing with us. There was no need for time before the creation of the material universe. Before there was space, before there was matter, there was time. But time wasn't needed until there was space and matter. So God spoke everything into existence, beginning with time. And time provides the proper framework for His creation. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. This is a general statement. That is going to be explained in detail beginning in verse 2. God created the heavens and the earth. Very general, very generic, very all-encompassing. So let's begin, let's look at verse 2. Here's the creation of the details of the creation of the heavens and the earth. Verse 2 tells us, gives us three descriptions of the condition of the earth. The earth was formless and void. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. As day one begins, we have this. This is day one. We have this very interesting condition in which the world existed. It didn't exist prior to this. God created the heavens and the earth. This is the description of what the created earth originally was like. We don't have a lot of detail, but we do know it is described here in its unique condition as, first of all, formless and void. It was the Hebrew word, and I'm not a Hebrew scholar any more than I'm a Greek scholar, but it means a wilderness, a devastated place, a waste place. It's described. It is between the two words. It's an empty space. So it was here as just an empty waste space with no life. But the material was here. We have the heavens and the earth created. In the beginning time, God created the heavens, space, and the earth, matter. Verse 1, three elements, time, space, and matter. And this matter was unformed. It was unorganized. It was waste space, empty. Second description, darkness was over the surface of the deep. The reason that darkness was still over the surface of the deep is because God had not created light. Everything was shrouded in darkness. Then the earth is engulfed in total, absolute darkness. And it was over the surface of the deep. That's an interesting description of the earth. It was darkness covered the surface of the deep. Well, what is deep? When Scripture speaks of the deep, what's it always, you got any idea what it's always speaking of? What do you think about when you think of the deep? The oceans, the seas, yeah, water. That's all that was water, as we see. Water was covering the surface of the earth. Day three, God's going to separate the water from the land, but at this point, it's just engulfed in water, covered in darkness, and the word deep is a synonym for the sea. There's just this global ocean surrounded by darkness. 2 Peter 3:5 makes this statement, the earth was formed out of water. 2 Peter 3:5 goes on to talk about the activities of the flood, the creation of the world out of the flood, but originally the world was created out of the water that covered everything. Proverbs 8:27. In Proverbs 8, you've got the personification of wisdom, and you've got, which is, I think, really a description of Christ, but Proverbs 8:27 says, he drew a circle over the face of the deep. Obviously, God took this uninhabited matter, and he formed it into a sphere, into a circle, and then the third description, the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. The word literally means hovering. God was hovering over this unformed, lifeless material that is engulfed in water and covered in darkness, and the Spirit of God is hovering. What's the significance of the Spirit of God hovering? Well, that indicates to us that there is only one cause for all that's happening, and it's God. He is the agent of creation. I think this is the testimony of the New Testament is that all things were created by him, that is Christ, and for him, and he controls all things. The Spirit of God is superintending, hovering over the waters, directly in charge of every aspect of the creative process. And in the Bible, you find that the Spirit of God is the source of all life. Psalm 33:6 says, the heavens were made and all their host by the Spirit of his mouth. God provides the energy to shape and organize and bring order and life out of this mass of unformed material. And the first thing that happens creatively after the original material is in verse 3. Then God said, let there be light, and there was light. With the creation of light, which, by the way, what's the source of this light? When are we going to get the sun? Why couldn't we assume that it's the sun? Because it's not created yet. Okay? So God is the source of this light. So what do we have to rationally and reasonably conclude? That we have to accept the reality that the same God who can speak this formless void, this mass of unorganized matter called earth at this point, if he can speak that into existence from what? From nothing. He can speak light into existence without necessarily needing the sun to create that light. And that's what he has done. He said, let there be light. And there was light. And we begin here, we see the establishment of the cyclical succession of days and nights. Periods of light followed by periods of darkness. So what does that indicate to us? That this mass of earth is doing what? It's revolving. The earth begins to rotate on its axis. And darkness is on one side, light is on the other. And God created light. There was light simply because God told it to exist. Verse 4, God saw the light, saw that the light was good. Of course it was good, right? Who made it? God made it. Who is the one who gets to be the, who gets to establish the standard of what's good and what's not good? Good God, right? God. And this is, we're going to see this repeated in verse 10, 12, 18, 21, 25, 31. Everything God created was good. Until he gets to the end of verse 31, he saw all that he had made, and it was very good. The standard, God is the standard of good. The standard of good is not outside of him or independent of him, regardless of what man thinks he is able to decide. In verse 4, God separated the light from the darkness. Isaiah 45:7 says, God is the one forming light and creating darkness. He starts the cycle of days. He separates light from darkness. He determined they would operate consecutively and they would be established in an unchanging cyclical order that has operated consistently ever since God said it would be that way on day what? Day one. He gave them names. Verse 5, he called the light day and the darkness he called night. And my friends, that's what it's always been. And verse 5 says, and there was evening and there was morning one day. This is the completion of the first day ever. And I don't expect that God's going to do this, but I hope one of the things, we in heaven we're supposed to know all things perfectly, right? I sure would like to see an instant replay of this, wouldn't you? That would be so fascinating if God's got some way of hitting the rewind button, or whatever he can do, and showing us, hey, I told you this is what happened. Let me show you. It would be interesting, intriguing, and fascinating. I don't think it would. If we were to see it, I will say this. I think if we were to see it from the human perspective, it'd blow us away. It might destroy us. It might cause your mind, your head to explode. But because it would it'd just be too much. But maybe in our glorified state, we'll see it and appreciate it. And anyway, day one. Day one, morning and night. There was evening, there was morning, one day. Evening and morning, just so that we're clear, just so there's no room for confusion or misunderstanding. There was, how long was this day? It was an evening and a morning. It was one cycle of the earth that has continued to make that same cycle every day since it was established. It was a day, one day. One 24-hour day that God did all this. Day two, God continues to shape these elements into the, he's getting things ready. He's going to take all that was void and formless and covered with darkness and covered with water, and he's going to create from that this inhabitable place for everything else he has in mind to create down the road in the subsequent days. So he said in verse 6, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters. God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse, and it was so. God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening and there was morning a second day. All right. So having separated light from darkness, now it's time to create space, the heavens. In the beginning, he created the heavens, space. Now he's defining, he is bringing more order and more design to what existed with the separation, with a series of separations. Separated on day one, light from darkness. Here he's going to separate water from air. Third day, he's going to separate land from water, getting everything ready for inhabitation of the rest of creation. But the earth was at the beginning of day two, the end of day one, the earth was this mass of elements completely engulfed in water. But God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters and let it separate the waters from the waters. God separates the waters into two separate places. He put an expanse between the water that remained on the surface of the earth and water that was above the surface of the earth, creating this expanse that, from what I could learn, this word expanse means to spread out thinly. And so there's this sphere of the earth covered with water. It was engulfed in water. I don't know how far out from the surface of the earth as it is today the water went, but God basically cut a gap in the waters and created heaven, the heavens. Created space, or then this expanse is what we know as the heavens. Literally means the sky. Refers to the space above us. And here's what's happening. The universe is beginning to take shape. Verse 7 reiterates this. And God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse. And it was so. All right. My friends, this has been the topic of a lot of discussion. What was this expanse of water that was above the earth? The expanse of the water that was on the earth, we can understand what happens there. Because on day three, God's going to cause a great cataclysmic event that's going to raise the surface of the land, separate land from water. The seas are going to take their place. The land's going to take its place. But what of this water that's above the surface of the earth? Well, you probably heard this and are aware of this, but the most common theory is that God created this water firmament above the skies that engulfed the atmosphere, surrounded the entire earth in water, and it created this kind of a greenhouse effect where, and there's a lot of, I guess, a lot of scientific credibility to this theory. I'm going to tell you that it is a theory because we don't know for certain. We don't know for certain why. Because the Bible doesn't tell us that's exactly what was up there. But this, it does kind of make sense. And I don't want to spend too much time just on speculation. But according to this theory that's put forth by Henry Morse and a lot of other creation scientists, this expanse of water was up there shielding the earth from the harmful radiation effects that come from space and from the sun. It was creating kind of a greenhouse where the earth would not have gone through any of the hydrological cycles. There wouldn't have been any wind blowing. The ground would have been watered constantly by a mist that we'll read about later. And there was that it just created this perfect environment for life to be sustained. And that's why man could live to 900 years old. Animals could live long enough to be the age of to grow to the size of a giant dinosaur. The vegetation, because you remember, what did everything eat in the beginning? Everything ate vegetation. We didn't have death until the fall. And if you're going to eat an animal, it has to die, right? There's no death before the fall. So everything ate vegetation. And if this firmament, this expanse above, was just this giant water shroud that covered the entire earth, that would explain that. And then when we get to the flood, what happened, and because it hadn't, we know from Genesis, from the Genesis account of the flood, that it hadn't rained on the surface of the earth. But when God decided to flood the earth, he just turned that water loose and brought it back and flooded the whole surface of the earth. So we may look at, in that situation, we may talk about this a little more as we go along, but in that situation, there wouldn't have been any deserts, there wouldn't have been any ice caps, there would have been this vapor canopy that's just shielding the earth and providing this perfect environment. And that theory would explain why, after that canopy was removed after the flood, that's why the lifespan of man begins to go down from a practical standpoint. I think it's going down because God said it's going to go down. Put a limit to it. So I will say, based on all that I've read, there are a lot of creation scientists who say that canopy theory doesn't work. So all I can say is, I don't think we ought to be dogmatic about the things to which the scriptures don't specifically tell us. But I think to some degree that canopy idea does make some sense. But here's what it does say, that in between the waters that were on the surface of the earth and the waters that were in the heavens, there was a space. And verse 7, God made the expanse, and it was so. That's kind of an interesting phrase there in verse 7, at the end of verse 7, it was so. We're going to see that repeated in verse 11, verse 15, verse 24. That little phrase is added to the aspects of God's creation that were fixed. Something that's not going to change, that's going to remain for all time. He didn't say that light and darkness was fixed because it's changing from light to darkness. It was so. I think describes something that is fixed and unchanging, and that aspect of creation's not going to be changed. At the end of verse 8, or in verse 8, God called the expanse heaven. But he doesn't say it's good yet. He didn't say it on day 2. He's not going to say it until the end of verse 10. He's going to say it's good because at that point, the light was good, but the expanse is not good. The earth is not good because it's not yet been brought to the point of being habitable. There was morning, there was evening, and there was morning, a second day. I think we got time for day 3. Day 3, God is going to shape the earth. Having separated light from darkness, having separated water and air, he's now going to separate, divide the water from the land. He says, let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. The earth is engulfed in this water, but below that water is the solid matter from which the earth, the land of the earth, would be comprised. And God said, let those things be separated. And at his command, the waters of the earth were collected into one area. The waters and the dry land appeared, and God separated the water from the dry land. Everything, all the material that's under the surface of the water begins to move. How does it move? It moves at the word of God, because God commanded it to move. And what happens here is there is land begins to lift up above the surface of the water. The waters recede, gather into one place. And most people think that when the earth was first created on day, the land was separated from the water on day three, that there was not the continents as they exist today, separated by the oceans, but one giant continent. And if you take a map of the world and you look at all the continents and you could scoot them all together, they fit together kind of like the pieces of a puzzle, don't they? So that kind of makes sense to me. When would the earth have taken the form with the continents divided? That would have happened, I think, maybe during the flood. This is another one of those things that I'm not going to be absolutely dogmatic about it, but that seems to make sense because of when the flood came, the waters that were above fell. When we get to that account, we'll see that water also came from where? From the earth. There was tremendous cataclysmic things happening on the earth, and the things that I read about this separation of the water from the land indicates that even though if it was one giant continent, there would have been channels of water, tunnels of water, that the waters would all have been connected. So there was just a tremendous amount of water involved that if that does break loose and start to fissure out during the flood, it would explain the tectonic movement that would separate the continents into their current form. I don't know. But here's what happens here. The surfaces of the solid earth appear above the waters. The waters are retreating off of this rising continent. And the waters, the continents, the earth, the dry land is gathered into one place. The earth, then the waters into one place. Just want to point you to this passage. If you think, I like to take a little bit of time and show you how this is supported other places in Scripture. In Psalm 104, we read these verses once, but they pertain to this. Psalm 104, verse 5. He established the earth upon its foundation so that it will not totter forever and ever. You covered it with the deep as with a garment. The waters were standing above the mountains. This is, I think, a reference to the way it was before day three. On day three, verse 7, at your rebuke they fled. At the sound of your thunder, they hurried away. The mountains rose, the valleys sank down to the place which you established for them. You set a boundary that they may not pass over, so that they will not return to cover the earth. I think the psalmist believed the account of creation from Genesis 1. Verse 9, let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place. And they were. The land, verse and let the dry land appear, and it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the gathering of the waters he called the seas, and God saw that it was good. Well, why is it now good? Well, it's now good because it's getting ready to be an inhabitable environment. So when we get to verse 10, we've got this three-part universe, the sea, the earth, the heavens. And in verse 11, we see God's, now that it's ready, here comes life. Here starts to be the formation of living things. Then God said, verse 11, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed and fruit trees on the earth, bearing fruit after their kind with seed in them. And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind and trees bearing fruit with seed in them after their kind. All right, what keeps getting repeated? After their kind. By the way, God made all of this, all these trees bearing fruit. What kind of, how big would the tree have to be to bear fruit? Has to be a mature tree. He didn't plant a bunch of seedlings and let them grow over time. On this day, three, there were trees there bearing fruit. There was vegetation after its kind, plants yielding seed. God unmistakably speaks these things into existence. And the distinction between the two, the tree bears fruit and the seed is where? It's in the fruit. The vegetation bears seed, plants yielding seed. The plants produce the seed, which then gets dispersed on the land. So this is providing for the propagation of more vegetation, reproduction. The seeds get spread. But he made these things, fully grown vegetation with seed and after their kind, after their kind, after their kind is repeated, making it clear that a tree can only bring forth something that is after its kind. It only has the capacity to function on the base and reproduce on the basis of the genetic code with which God designed and created it. So in Genesis 1, 11, and 12, you have the origin of all vegetable life. And you not only have its origin, but you've got the continuity established by which these things will perpetuate life, the seed that is in them. And God looked at it all in verse 12 and he saw it was good. And he signs off again at the end of day three saying, there was evening, there was morning, a third day. 24-hour day. The term, as I said, is used more than 100 times, morning and evening or evening and morning. In the Old Testament, it always refers to a 24-hour day. That's the third day. Any questions or comments or insights that I failed to point out? There are probably plenty of them.